on to NBA Recap. Today is Friday, April 15th, and on today's show, we're going to be previewing the final two games of the play-in tournament. Tonight, we have the 8-9 matchup in the Eastern Conference with the Atlanta Hawks taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. And in the Western Conference, we also have the 8-9 matchup with the LA Clippers taking on the New Orleans Pelicans. Those two games will decide who gets the 8th seed in both conferences and who is out of the playoffs entirely. So we're going to break down both of those games in just a moment. But first, if you'd like to follow the show on social, we are at NBA Recap Pod, or you can just search YouTube or smart speakers for NBA Recap Podcast. And if you enjoy the show, consider subscribing or leaving a review. It really helps get the word out. All right, so starting off today in Cleveland, where the Cavaliers are taking on the Atlanta Hawks, the 8th-seeded Cavaliers taking on the 9th-seeded Hawks. Both conferences had this happen where the 7th seed defeated the 8th seed and then the 9th seed defeated the 10th seed. So we've got an 8-9 matchup in both conferences. The Cavaliers fell all the way to the 8th seed after being surpassed at the end of the season by the Nets, whereas the Hawks surged into the 9th seed after being in 10th for quite some time, but they were just able to pip the Charlotte Hornets for that 9th seed by the end of the year. And so we do in fact have the 8-9 matchup, and the Cavaliers unfortunate to be here in the first place, because they for the longest time throughout this season were one of the upper echelon teams in the Eastern Conference. They had that elite point differential for the longest time, especially at the beginning of the season when they were firing on all cylinders with Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley, Lauri Markkanen, Darius Garland, and Colin Sexton all in the starting lineup playing very well, but they were quickly ravaged by injury and they remained compromised all season long. First, Colin Sexton went out, then TJ Warren never made his return, then Ricky Rubio went out off the bench, and then the big three of Markkanen, Mobley, and Allen all went in and out of the lineup throughout the latter half of the year. So it was just a tumultuous season for the Cavaliers, to say the least, after a really encouraging start. And so they are undoubtedly disappointed to be all the way down in the 8th seed, not only in the play-in game, but now fighting for their playoff lives. And they could very easily lose this game because the Atlanta Hawks are a very talented team. And they, on the other hand, have also been struggling all season long, but not due to injury necessarily. It's just been sort of a lack of effort, a malaise about this Atlanta Hawks team after getting to the Eastern Conference playoffs last season. They came into this year not exactly exhibiting the same passion and fire and intensity that you would expect or hope for. There were some injuries that they had to deal with, and now, of course, they're without John Collins, but still, it was not exactly for any reason other than just a lack of effort throughout the season, for the most part, that they struggled. You would have expected a team of their caliber to be fighting for the top seeds in the conference, frankly, after going all the way to the conference finals, but it was not the case. They just sort of struggled once again, and last season, you could point to the coaching issues that they had, and halfway through the season, of course, they fired Lloyd Pierce, promoted Nate McMillan, and then they also had some internal drama with the John Collins, Trae Young rumors about whether or not they could fit together on a winning team. That was also a storyline that was overshadowing this team last year, but none of that happened this year. There was no drama. Even the Cam Reddish trade to the Knicks, even that was pretty amicable, frankly. So there wasn't really that many excuses that the Hawks could point to for their struggles this season, other than the fact that they were just not playing very passionately and intensely. So the reason why I bring all that up is to say that they are still a very talented team. I mean, you can't get to the conference finals, even if it was a somewhat lucky run there, without a really talented squad, and they've basically got the exact same squad that they did last season, minus Cam Reddish. And so at the end of the day, it's not that surprising that when we look at the matchup predictor on ESPN's Basketball Power Index, and we look at the Vegas odds, the Hawks are actually not underdogs, even though they don't have home court advantage and they're the 9th seed. So in terms of BPI, they are 49% to win this game, but it's very close. It's basically 50-50. The Cavs are 50.2% to win this one. So it's essentially a toss-up according to ESPN's BPI. And then in terms of Vegas, it's actually the Hawks who are favored, despite not having home court advantage. They are -2. So for all intents and purposes, this is a toss-up. Now, the other thing, though, if we look at the injury report, that's where it starts to get dicey, because John Collins, of course, still out for the Hawks. Lou Williams, the veteran scorer off the bench, he's also still out. And then Bogdan Bogdanovic is listed as day-to-day, but I think he will be good to go by the time this game rolls around. As for the Cavaliers, Jarrett Allen is listed as out. But I would also strongly assume that he plays because he's just dealing with that broken thumb, and it's not like he has any cardio issues or conditioning that are not up to snuff. He should be totally fine to play other than the thumb. So I would imagine that we see Jarrett Allen out there and Bogdan Bogdanovic, but no John Collins, and of course no Lou Williams. And then there's several other guys that are also not listed on the injury report for the Cavaliers, but who are just permanently out, like Colin Sexton. Of course, they traded Ricky Rubio already, but then also TJ Warren as well. So Cleveland, despite getting some of their guys back, are still a significantly compromised team compared to where they were at the beginning of the season, whereas the Hawks, without Collins and Lou Williams, are a somewhat compromised team. So yeah, I think the lines are about right. I would probably lean towards the Atlanta Hawks -2, frankly. I mean, it's basically a toss-up, and I just think that they have a slightly more talented team. I mean, Trae Young was so incredible in the playoffs last season. We'll get into all the keys of this matchup in just a second, but I would probably lean towards the Hawks if I had to pick one. I think ultimately we're just not going to go with the best bet for these final two games of the play-in tournament. We were sort of burned on our last two games that we chose for best bets. We went with the Clippers and the Spurs, and those were both proven to be wrong. So we're going to stay away from the best bets this time. But if I had to pick, I would probably lean towards the Hawks -2. That line is pretty low, and I do think that they will in fact win this game. And one of the reasons why I say that is their record over the last 10 games. The Hawks ended the season on a 7-3 run over their last 10 games, and they ultimately ended up with a +1.5 point differential. Their last five games were a loss to the Raptors, a win over the Wizards, a loss to the Heat, and then a win over the Rockets and Hornets. Whereas the Cavaliers, they were on a 3-7 run over their last 10 games, so really sputtering to the finish line. The Cavaliers, their last five games were a loss to the 76ers, a loss to the Magic, a loss to the Nets, a win against the Bucks, but then a loss against the Nets again. So really disappointing run of form for the Cavaliers. To be fair, those were pretty tough games, but still, that is a disappointing record, 3-7 over their last 10, whereas the Hawks were 7-3. That definitely gives the Hawks a little bit of a boost in my mind. And then the other thing is the season series. The Hawks had the Cavaliers number this season. They won 3 out of 4 matchups. The only game that the Cavaliers won was their very first matchup, and then their second matchup was postponed, so then they played their final three games in which the Hawks won all three, and they dominated the Cavaliers in their final game of the season, 131-107. So it definitely feels like there's a little bit more momentum for the Hawks at this point, and that is the twisted beauty of the play-in game, is that the team that is the underdog, the ninth seed, or if it was the 10th seed, either way, they are the team that just won a game, whereas the team that is the higher seed, nominally, the Cleveland Cavaliers in this case, they have just lost a game to get to this point. So it's kind of this perverse logic where the underdog is naturally going to have a little bit more momentum. So we'll see if that manifests in this game, or if the home court advantage and Darius Garland are able to carry the Cavaliers over the Hawks. We shall see. But let's get into the four keys for this game: the key players, the key matchups, the key strengths, and the key weaknesses. So first off, the key players. Last time for the Hawks, we chose Trae Young and Bogdan Bogdanovic, but Bogdanovic ended up coming off the bench and not exactly playing a ton of minutes. Kevin Huerter was the starter, and I don't know, he just didn't end up making that big of an impact on the game. So for this time, we're going to take Trae Young, obviously still as a key player, but we're also going to go with DeAndre Hunter. He was really dynamic as a scorer in their last game, and of course, he started last season on fire, and it's really been a long time coming for him as a scorer in his own right. So I'm going to say Trae Young and DeAndre Hunter are key players for the Atlanta Hawks. Hunter in the previous game went 9 of 16 from the field for 22 points. So will he be able to score with that same volume and efficiency in this game? That would be a huge boon for the Hawks if he could. And then, of course, Trae Young is always an X factor in his own right. Usually, he's pretty consistently like a high volume, high efficiency scorer with a ton of assists as well, orchestrating the offense beautifully. But in their last game, he wasn't super efficient, actually. He only managed 24 points on 8 of 24 shooting. So that was actually a bit disappointing. They were a little bit lucky, frankly, to get that victory with that slightly underwhelming performance from Trae. So I would imagine that he will bounce back and have a more efficient game tonight. Whereas for the Cavaliers, our key players are going to be Darius Garland and Evan Mobley. I was reticent to include him as a quote-unquote key player for their first matchup because I was thinking, well, he's just a rookie, you know? Is he really going to be making that much of an impact on this game? He might be a bit intimidated. It's not that common for rookies to make big impacts impacts in the postseason, but I was proven wrong. Once again, Mobley proving to be unflappable. He had 19 points, 7 rebounds on a very efficient 9 of 13 shooting. He also had 2 assists and 2 blocks, and he was providing that trademark defense. It's been pointed out many times before, but he is just one of the most incredible defensive rookies that we have seen in quite some time, and that was on full display in their last game despite the loss. So will he be able to replicate that scoring efficiently with pretty high volume and providing that incredible defense? And then the big X factor with this one, he's not really a key player, but Jarrett Allen, will he return? That could potentially affect Mobley's production, although all season long they were very good together as a tandem, the two big guys. So how will Mobley deal with Allen's potential return? Will he be able to play that consistent defense? Will he be able to score? I mean, 19 points is definitely above his season average, so he is definitely a key player. And then Darius Garland, he was incredible in their last game. I was also curious whether or not he would be able to sustain the level of scoring that he had produced throughout the regular season, but he absolutely not only maintained but exceeded his scoring from the regular season. He had 34 points on 13 of 24 shooting in that last game. He was just incredible orchestrating the offense for the Cavaliers. So will he be able to match Trae Young's output in terms of the scoring and the distribution? I think he will, basically, at this point, because he's proven to be a clutch scorer when they need him most. And so, yeah, he and Mobley would be our key players for the Cleveland Cavaliers. In terms of our key matchups, I am very intrigued to see how these various dynamic defenders that the Hawks have at their disposal, like DeAndre Hunter and Kevin Huerter and Bogdan Bogdanovic, and even Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot saw the court for, 16 minutes in their last game. So who will all those guys match up against on this Cavaliers team, and how will they affect their offense? Because that can be a pretty intimidating defensive lineup, despite the fact that they do have a couple of sieves defensively, like Trae Young and Danilo Gallinari. Apart from them, they're a pretty stout defensive team, and so will the Cavaliers' offensive liabilities from the previous game, like Lauri Markkanen, Caris LeVert, and Isaac Okoro, be able to improve in this game, or will they be stifled once again by those defensive guys? Markkanen in their last game was 5 of 14 from the field. LeVert was 4 of 12 from the field, and then Okoro was 0 of 3 from the field. So those three guys really struggling in their last game, and I could potentially see them struggling once again with these swarming defenders. I could see DeAndre Hunter shutting down Lauri Markkanen. I could see Bogdan Bogdanovic getting put on Caris LeVert. So we shall see how the wing defenders for the Atlanta Hawks match up against the Cleveland Cavaliers offensively. And then another matchup that I'm interested by is the big guys, Clint Capela and off the bench Onyeka Okongwu for the Hawks, going up against obviously the rookie Evan Mobley and potentially Jarrett Allen. That is a really juicy matchup of traditional big guys who are all defensively capable. That dynamic duo of Mobley and Allen for the Cavaliers, especially at the beginning of the season when they were both healthy, was just incredible. No one would have expected how dominant they would be early on, and such that they would build up this huge net rating and coast on that throughout the majority of the regular season. They finally kind of came back down to earth a little bit with all these injuries, but at the beginning of the year, they were absolutely incredible. So if Jarrett Allen plays and if he looks right, they could absolutely be stifling the Hawks in the interior, whereas Clint Capela and Onyeka Okongwu are no slouches either. Capela led the NBA in rebounding last season, and Okongwu, the sophomore big man off the bench, he is absolutely a dynamic defender in his own right. So I'm interested to see who ends up on top in terms of the paint scoring in this one with all those big guys in there defending the rim. And then, of course, the final matchup that we're taking a look at is the point guards, Trae Young and Darius Garland. Who is going to be guarding those guys on either team? They've both got a couple of decent options. I would assume that Okoro for the Cavaliers is going to be hawking Trae Young, and he was so bad offensively in their last game that I don't know how much time he's going to see on the court, but his defense, nonetheless, is still really valuable, especially against a dominant offensive player like Trae Young, whereas Darius Garland was really dominant as well, and as we've touched on already, the Hawks have plenty of guys to throw at him, like Kevin Huerter and Bogdan Bogdanovic and even DeLon Wright off the bench. So there's one thing that we know for sure, neither of those guys are going to be guarding each other. They've got too much to handle offensively, so will the defender that gets stuck on them be able to slow them down in the slightest? I am not so sure about either one of them, frankly, being slowed down, but we shall see. All right, next up, we can move on to our key strengths and key weaknesses for these two teams. So for the Hawks, it's pretty obvious they are an elite offensive team with Trae Young orchestrating. He pretty much just grants you an incredible offense in and of himself. They ended up with a 113, nearly a 114 offensive rating in the Eastern Conference last year, which was one of the top, it was actually third best in the East, and it was one of the top 10 offenses in the entire NBA. I think it was sixth. So that is pretty incredible. And like I said, with DeAndre Hunter knocking down three-pointers, as well as Danilo Gallinari in the starting lineup in place of John Collins, I mean, defensively, he's definitely a step down, but offensively, he opens up even more opportunities for the Hawks with his shooting. So the offense, broadly speaking, definitely a strength for this team. And then I've already touched on it basically, but just the depth, even without John Collins and Lou Williams, they are still an incredibly deep team. They've got several guys coming off the bench that could potentially be starters on a lot of other teams like Onyeka Okongwu or Bogdan Bogdanovic or DeLon Wright. So we'll see if the Hawks are able to take advantage of that whenever the bench units come into the game. As for the weaknesses for this Atlanta Hawks team, we haven't really talked too much about John Collins' absence. Without him, they are a less potent offensive team in terms of the pick and roll with Trae Young, but defensively is where they really miss him. Inserting Danilo Gallinari into the starting lineup is definitely a risk in terms of your defense. He is not very good on that end, neither is Trae Young, so you're really relying on Clint Capella and DeAndre Hunter, who are really capable defenders. But still, they ended up with a 112 defensive rating, which was fourth worst in the Eastern Conference this season. They were in the company of the Orlando Magic, the Detroit Pistons, and the Charlotte Hornets down there at the bottom of the East defensively. So that is obviously a liability for the Hawks. But one more strength that I forgot to mention would be just the late game execution and the offense that they can generate, especially in an isolation scenario. You've got several guys who are elite shot makers in that regard, in Trae Young, Danilo Gallinari, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and then kind of Kevin Huerter. I mean, all four of those guys have proven to be big shot makers at various points throughout their careers. Huerter was incredible in the playoffs last year, as was Trae Young, obviously. And then Gallinari and Bogdanovic have also been big shot makers throughout their careers. So that is definitely another strength that I would point to for the Hawks, just the late game execution and being able to find some way to score down the stretch when things are really tight and there's like just a couple of minutes left on the clock. I think they can find a way to win in those scenarios. So anyways, we can move on now to the Cavaliers. Strengths for this team, it's kind of the opposite of the Hawks. Their strength is their defense. The Hawks were fourth worst in the conference in defense. The Cavaliers were third best. They had a 105 defensive rating by the end of the season. That was just incredible, and it was thanks in large part to the dynamic duo, like we've touched on already, of Jarrett Allen and Evan Mobley locking down the paint while also being able to switch out onto smaller players, especially Mobley. His defensive versatility was incredible. He can absolutely be a defensive player of the year at some point in his career because he can just do it all on that end of the floor. He's moves his feet well. He's got quick hands. He's really long and lanky, and like I said, he's got good instincts in the paint, but he can also switch out onto a smaller player on the perimeter. So obviously the defense overall and Evan Mobley's impact on that is a strength for the Atlanta Hawks. And then another strength that they have obviously would be the home court advantage. That goes without saying. And then another strength, and this kind of goes along with the defense, but it's kind of a weird one, just their height. The Cavaliers are a very tall team. When they had all their guys available, including Jarrett Allen, they started that three big lineup of Allen, Mobley, and Markkanen, the 3 7-footers in the starting lineup. And a lot of people prior to the season were very skeptical of the efficacy of that lineup, but it actually worked really well. And so, yeah, they could definitely be out-rebounding the Hawks if they've got those three guys and then the veteran Kevin Love coming off the bench, who is an incredible rebounder in his own right. And when you contrast them to the tiny Trae Young and Danilo Gallinari, who has not exactly ever been a dominant rebounder himself, you could definitely see the Cavaliers having a big advantage on the boards. But in terms of weaknesses for this Cavaliers team, there's a couple that stand out pretty glaringly. The offense has never really been their strong suit. They're pretty much the polar opposite of the Hawks. They were really great on defense, really bad on offense. They were the fourth worst team in terms of the offense in the Eastern Conference this season, and that is in part due to all the injuries that they have sustained. No Colin Sexton, Ricky Rubio going out halfway through the season. They are just not exactly the most dynamic scoring team. The three-point shooting is not encouraging. They only made 9 threes in their last game, 6 of which came from Garland and Love. Love off the bench. So other than those two guys, only 3 three-pointers made throughout the entire roster. That is disappointing. And you have to imagine that they're hoping for a little bit more offensively from Caris LeVert and Lauri Markkanen specifically, because that's the primary reason that those two guys are on the floor, is to score. And they managed to just combine for 25 points. Markkanen had 13 points on 5 of 14 shooting, and LeVert had 12 points on 4 of 12 shooting. So those two guys really need to step up offensively and provide more value for the Cavaliers. They're really going to be relying on them. And otherwise, they don't have too much scoring. I mean, the guys that they have coming in off the bench are just not offensively very capable players, like Lamar Stevens and Dean Wade and Jetty Osman. It's just not really their strong suits. So we'll see if they can muster enough points to hang with the Hawks, or if they're just outscored, frankly. And then I've got a couple more here, but we've already touched on basically all these other weaknesses, the injuries that they've dealt with all season long, and then that goes hand in hand with their lack of depth. So like I said at the beginning of this preview, I'd probably be leaning towards the Atlanta Hawks at -2 in this one, but it's ultimately going to be a stay away from me. I feel like I was railing against the Cavaliers throughout this whole preview, but I think they could definitely win this one at the end of the day. I mean, they do have home court advantage. That matters a lot. And they've got a lot of veteran guys like Kevin Love and Rajon Rondo that can potentially provide a steadying influence. So I do think this is basically a toss-up. I would lean towards Hawks, but I think it's really anybody's game here. But next up, we can move on to the Western Conference, where we also have the 8-9 matchup for the final spot in the playoffs to go against the Phoenix Suns, where either of these teams will probably be swept. But nonetheless, we have the LA Clippers in 8th taking on the New Orleans Pelicans in the 9th seed. This game doesn't tip until 10 p.m. Eastern time on TNT. And unlike the last game, which was pretty much a toss-up, there is a big favorite in this one. It is the LA Clippers. According to ESPN's BPI, they've got a 72% chance of winning this game, whereas the Pelicans just have a 27% chance to win. That is pretty surprising. And Vegas obviously agrees. They've got the Clippers as -4 favorites. That is really surprising to me, frankly. I mean, the Clippers were soundly defeated in their last matchup against the Minnesota Timberwolves, whereas the Pelicans looked really encouraging. Once again, like I was saying earlier, it's that perverse thing where the team that is the underdog is naturally going to have a little bit of momentum because they had to win their last game to get to this point, whereas the team that is the higher seed had to lose to get to this point. So I love that little dynamic that is built into this matchup. But that being said, we shouldn't let that sway us too significantly, because the Clippers obviously were a much better team throughout the regular season. They ended up at 42-40 by the end of the regular season, whereas the Pelicans were just at 36-46. But over their last 10 games, both of these teams were 6-4, but the Clippers ended the season on a 5-game winning streak, whereas the Pelicans were on a 2-game losing streak before beating the Spurs in their last matchup in the play-in game. But the Clippers ended the season beating the Thunder and the Kings and the Suns, and then notably, the Pelicans on April 3rd. They won 119-100. So that is definitely a concerning sign for New Orleans, and the Clippers were pretty dominant in some of those wins. They beat the Thunder in their last game of the regular season, 138-88. Although, to be fair, the Thunder were putting out a pretty much G League roster, but still, the Clippers looking pretty dominant now that they've gotten Paul George back into the lineup. And so that ESPN BPI 72% favorite and the -4 odds from Vegas make a little bit more sense in light of those recent records. In terms of the injury report, both of these teams obviously still missing their best players. No Kawhi Leonard for LA, no Zion Williamson for the New Orleans Pelicans. Both of those guys have been practicing recently, so they've both been tantalizing in these little clips that we've seen, but neither of them are projected to play anytime soon, so we're not going to see them. And then Luke Kennard is the only other player that's listed on the injury report. He is day-to-day for the Clippers, but I would imagine that he will in fact play. So other than those two star guys for both teams, there is not really any injuries to speak of. And in terms of the regular season series, it was actually in favor of the Pelicans. They won 3 of the 4 matchups. They beat the Clippers in their first matchup 94-81. They dominated their second matchup 123-104, and then they won their third game as well 113-89. So pretty dominant stuff for New Orleans. But like I said, in that fourth to last game of the regular season for the Clippers, they did finally beat the Pelicans 119-100. So if it wasn't for that, that would be a really concerning red flag for the Clippers, but they did look pretty dominant in that one. And so I think ultimately I would lean towards the Clippers -4. But again, like I said before, this is going to be a stay away from me because I got a little bit burned by the Clippers in that first game. And the Pelicans looked really good against the Spurs. Their offense is just totally dynamic and unstoppable at times. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. But yeah, I think I'm ultimately going to stay away. But if I had to pick, I would go with the Clippers -4. All right, so let's get into our four keys. The key players, the key matchups, the key strengths, and the key weaknesses. So for the key players, obviously for the Clippers, it's Paul George, and he is the only one. And like I said in the matchup preview of the Clippers-Timberwolves game, it's really a compliment that they just have one key player in Paul George because they are so deep. They've just got a ton of capable guys throughout the roster, especially small forward wing-sized guys, those coveted 3-and-D players. They've just got so many to rely upon, from Luke Kennard to Robert Covington to Norman Powell to Nick Batum to Marcus Morris, Terrence Mann. I mean, they are just like replete with capable forwards. So when I say that they've got just one key player, I mean it as a compliment, but Paul George, obviously the best of the bunch. He was really solid in their last matchup against the Timberwolves. He was shooting the lights out. He was 6 of 12 from beyond the arc. He had 34 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, but he wasn't super efficient overall, just 10 of 24 from the field. He did hit a big shot late, but then he missed one as well. He ended up with 3 steals too, so he really did a little bit of everything for the Clippers in that last game, leading the team. And so yeah, he is the key player for the Clippers, and I would imagine he's going to have another big game. As for the Pelicans, we've got 3 key players for them. It's their 3 leading scorers: CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, and Jonas Valanciunas. All 3 of those guys were really solid against the Spurs in their last matchup. They were all scoring efficiently and with high volume. So McCollum led the way with 32 points on 12 of 23 shooting, but then Brandon Ingram chipped in with 27 points on 11 of 19 shooting, and Valanciunas had 22 points on 9 of 14 shooting. So we had pointed that out prior to the game in our preview as a potential key factor of just the scoring that couldn't be stopped by the Spurs with those 3 guys, and that was absolutely the case. The Pelicans were just too good offensively down the stretch, and will that be the case once again? It very well could be. They are just a very capable offensive team with those 3 guys. McCollum has added a really valuable element for this team, the shooting that he provides, and the ball handling too. He basically was acting like their point guard down the stretch. So if those 3 are able to score like they did against the Spurs, they are going to be a tough team to beat. To be sure, they are the 3 key players: McCollum, Ingram, and Valanciunas. As for the key matchups, I've got one highlighted as a huge matchup. It is the Herb Jones versus Paul George defensive assignment. I can't wait to see Herb Jones take on Paul George. He was incredible against the Spurs once again. He will almost certainly make one of the all-rookie teams, and he was in contention for the all-defensive teams. And so will he be able to slow Paul George down? I think he will certainly do his best. I mean, Paul George is a very dynamic scorer on offense, but Herb Jones has shown to be an incredible defender, so I'm really looking forward to that matchup, the rookie versus the veteran. And then conversely, I'm also interested to see who on the Clippers is guarding Brandon Ingram, their main wing scorer. They've got several different options to pick from. They've got Marcus Morris, they've got Nick Batum, they've got Robert Covington off the bench, Terrence Mann. I mean, all of these guys are capable wing defenders for a guy like Brandon Ingram. The Spurs didn't really have anybody to match up with Ingram's length, but Covington, he is obviously one of the most elite defenders in the NBA, and then Morris is a big dude, so I think they have plenty of guys to throw at Brandon Ingram. Will he be able to keep up the offense that he was displaying in the matchup against the Spurs, or will he be stifled? We shall see. And then I'm also interested to see whether or not the big guys for the Clippers can slow down Jonas Valanciunas, because he was also really dominant against the Spurs, popping out to 3. He obviously was an incredible 3-point shooter all season long. And so will Ivica Zubac be able to hang with Valanciunas if he's popping out to 3? Because we know that Zubac is not exactly the most fleet of foot. And otherwise, they could look to Isaiah Hartenstein off the bench, who was one of the better 6 men of the season all year long for the Clippers. And he only played 7 minutes in their last matchup, which I was a bit surprised by. So I would look to Hartenstein to play a little bit more, potentially be a defensive stopper coming in off the bench against Valanciunas. In terms of the key strengths and key weaknesses for these 2 teams, so for the Pelicans, the key strengths is, we've already touched on it, it's the offense. They are incredible with those 3 guys, McCollum, Ingram, and Valanciunas, firing on all cylinders. If you look at their total season averages, it's a little bit skewed because they only acquired McCollum halfway through the year. So they only ended up with a 109 offensive rating, which is actually 5th worst in the Western Conference. But they were much better after acquiring McCollum. He just provides them with so much value on that end of the floor. That's actually still better than the Clippers, their offensive rating by the end of the season, but their defense was worse. But still, now that they've got McCollum, they are a much more dynamic team offensively. And so that is definitely a strength for them. They were not able to be slowed down whatsoever by the Spurs. I've already touched on their offensive numbers in that game, but they were incredible. So frankly, I think this matchup predictor for ESPN, the BPI, I think it's underrating the Pelicans a little bit because their offense was so good, and I think they can continue to score like that in this game too. I think they might be slowed down a little bit by the Clippers, but not a whole lot. So I think that strength for the Pelicans, their offense and their three-point shooting, is really going to come to bear once again, and they could absolutely steal this game in LA. And then another strength that I would point to for the Pelicans would just be their youth and athleticism. Other than a couple of their guys in the starting lineup, like Valanciunas and McCollum, they have a really young and athletic and passionate team with guys like Jackson Hayes and Herb Jones and all the rookies off the bench, Jose Alvarado, Trey Murphy, Najee Marshall even saw the court in their last game. I mean, they are just a very young and athletic and exuberant team. Jose Alvarado sort of the poster child of that. He was really fired up in their last game against the Spurs. He's obviously a master of the steals, and so I think that could potentially help them steal a couple of possessions here and there, maybe in transition, against this more veteran, slightly slower team. The Clippers have several guys who are getting up there in age, like Batum and Morris, and even Paul George, Robert Covington, Reggie Jackson. These guys aren't exactly spring chickens either, so that is another thing that I would point to that could potentially help the Pelicans in this one, just the sheer athleticism and youth and exuberance that they've exhibited in the last couple of weeks and months. But in terms of the weaknesses for this team, the Pelicans, it kind of has to do with the same players that I was just talking about. It's their depth and overall talent level. Other than those top three guys, Valanciunas, McCollum, and Ingram, they are slightly less talented, I would say, than the Clippers. I think it sounds harsh to say it like that, but it's true. They just don't have quite as many top-end guys. They rely on several rookies and somewhat unproven players like Jackson Hayes, and you would have expected Devontae Graham to be more of an impact player for this team, but he just hasn't really lived up to expectations. And then Larry Nance came over from the Portland Trailblazers in that trade with CJ McCollum, but he hasn't really provided that much value either, so they are ultimately reliant on unproven guys and guys that I think in the end, if they continue to proceed in the playoffs, will get exploited at some point, because there is kind of just a talent gap between Trey Murphy and Najee Marshall and Jose Alvarado. If you compare them to the bench guys for the Clippers, Robert Covington, Norman Powell, Terrence Mann, I mean, these guys are like proven NBA veterans. And so while these guys are fun and exciting and young for the Pelicans, I think at some point their lack of depth might catch up to them, and it could be in this game. And then another weakness that I would point to for the Pelicans would be the coaching, just because we don't really know for sure yet what Willie Green is going to be in the playoffs as a playoff coach. He was fine against the Spurs, and he's been pretty solid all season long, frankly. So I don't want to say like too significantly that it's going to change the impact of this game, because he might just end up being a solid NBA coach and specifically a solid playoff coach. But we just don't really know for sure yet with Willie Green. However, we know that Ty Lue is a proven playoff coach. I mean, he was referred to as the Bill Belichick of the NBA. I think that's a bit of an exaggeration, but still, he is a really solid playoff coach. He frankly should be a contender for Coach of the Year this season with the injuries that they were dealing with on this team all season long, and where they ended up in the standings. The Clippers have just exceeded expectations time and time again, and Ty Lue is a big part of that. So I think that is definitely an advantage for the Clippers, or said another way, a disadvantage for the Pelicans. But as for the Clippers, the advantages that they've got, it is the top-end talent. They've got the best player in the series, or in the game, I should say, in Paul George. And oftentimes that is one of the things that it comes down to. Do you have the best player in the game? And I think he clearly is the best player in this matchup. He has the most experience in the playoffs. He's made big shots before. And so I think that is definitely an advantage that they have, is just Paul George in and of himself. They've also got the coaching advantage, like I touched on. They've got the home court advantage. And broadly speaking, they just have a lot of momentum at the moment. Other than their loss against the Timberwolves in their last game, they closed the season out so strong. And yeah, ever since Paul George came back, they've just been dominant. So I think they've got a lot of momentum coming into this game. And then finally, they just have a lot of depth, this team. We've already touched on it, but they just go like 9-10 deep of capable NBA players. And they didn't all see the court in the last game. They didn't all play up to their capabilities. But I think in this one, you might see a Terrence Mann going off for 15, 20 points. Reggie Jackson dropping 25. Isaiah Hartenstein coming in and providing a valuable defense. Or Robert Covington. I mean, they've just got so many different options to pick from. That I think that could potentially be a big factor for them in this one. As for the weaknesses, though, for this Clippers team, there's a couple things that you could point to. For one thing, their late game execution. If it's not going to be Paul George, they don't have a ton of other really good options. I mean, Reggie Jackson would be their primary other go-to scorer late in the game, but he is not exactly the most reliable guy all season long. I mean, he did average 16.8 points per game this year, but he shot 39% from the field. That is a bit disappointing, and he was really solid in the playoffs last season, but throughout his career, he's just not exactly exactly been that dynamic of a scorer. So I would be a little bit worried if he was your secondary go-to scorer late in the game. Obviously, having Paul George helps, but if he happened to be tied up, that is a bit of a problem for the Clippers. And then another problem that I would point to, and this might be a bit of a nitpick here, but it just seems like their defense is so heavily focused on the wings and the forwards that there are gaps in terms of like the perimeter and in the paint. You've got Ivica Zubac guarding the rim, but he's not exactly the most dominant defender. I mean, he's fine, but he is a little bit liable. That's why I was surprised to see Hartenstein not get more playing time, because he is a really solid defender in the interior. But if you're not going to be playing Hartenstein, they're a bit vulnerable in the paint, especially if you have Zubac being pulled out to the perimeter by Valanciunas with that three-point shooting. And then the guard defense as well, the small guys, obviously any of those bigger guys could switch onto a guard. But in terms of like really quick hands, point guard defense, like Patrick Beverley or Marcus Smart, they don't really have anybody quite like that. Their smallest players are like Reggie Jackson and Luke Kennard and Terrence Mann, who are all fine defensively, but none of them are like the ace defenders that they have on the wings. And so if the Pelicans had a dynamic scoring point guard like Trae Young or Ja Morant, that could potentially be more of a problem. But they really don't have anybody that's going to slash into the paint and set guys up like that. It's really just CJ McCollum and Devontae Graham. And so thankfully for the Clippers' sake, that deficiency is not as much of an issue. And like I said, it's a bit of a nitpick really, because any of those bigger guys can kind of switch on to guards anyways. So I don't really have too many more weaknesses for the Clippers. They are a pretty solid team, and that's why I would probably be leaning towards them -4 in this one if I had to pick. But ultimately, we're going to stay away from a best bets perspective. And so that'll do it for us today. So thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to follow the show on social, we are at NBA Recap Pod, or you can just search YouTube or smart speakers for NBA Recap Podcast. And if you enjoy the show, consider subscribing or leaving a review, and we'll be back tomorrow to recap those two games and to preview the playoffs. We've got the playoffs beginning on Saturday. Cannot wait. So we'll be previewing all of that tomorrow. But until then, thanks for tuning in.